Everybody, welcome to the Bhagavatam morning class. We will read Bhagavatam text, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text 9, which is a follow-up of the glorification, the mantra for Nrisingadeva. Yesterday, Mahaprabhu read the first part. Om namo bhagavate narasinghaya namaste jas tejas aviravir bhava vajranakha vajradamshtra karmashayan randhaya tamograsa grasa om swaha abhayam abhayam atmani bhuishtha om shrom. Second part is swastyastu vishvasya khala prasidatam. Dhyayanto bhutani shiva mithodhya. Manasya bhadram bhajatata dhoksaje. Avishyatam no matirapi ahaituki. Swastyastu vishvasya khala prasidatam. Dhyayanto bhutani shivam mithodhya. Manascha bhadram bhajatata dhokshaje. Avishyatam no matirapi ahaituki. Sastyastu vishvasya khalo prasidatam. Dhyayantu bhutani shivam mithodhya. Manascha bhadram bhajatata dhoksaje. Avishyatam no matirapi ahaituki. Svastyastu vishvasya khala prasidatam. Dhyayanti bhutani shivam mithodhya. Manascha bhadram bhajatata dhoksaje. Avishyatam namatirapi ahaituki. Amen. Svasti, auspiciousness. Astu, let there be. Vishvasya, of the entire universe. Kala, the envious, almost everyone. Prasidatam, let them be pacified. Dhyayantu, let them consider. Bhutani, all the living entities. Shivam, auspiciousness. Mitha, mutual. Dhya, by their intelligence. Mana, the mind. Cha, and. Bhadram, calmness. Bhajata, let it experience. Adhoksaje, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the perception of mind, intelligence, and senses. Avishyatam, let it be absorbed. Na, our. Mati, intelligence. Api, indeed. Ahaituki, without any motive. Translation. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. Please repeat after me. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga. For by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The following verse describes a Vaishnava. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Just like a desire tree, a Vaishnava can fulfill all the desires of anyone who takes shelter of his lotus feet. Prahlad Maharaj is a typical Vaishnava. He prays not for himself, but for all living entities, the gentle, the envious, and the mischievous. He always thought of the welfare of mischievous persons like his father, Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj did not ask for anything for himself. Rather, he prayed for the Lord to excuse his demoniac father. This is the attitude of a Vaishnava who always thinks of the welfare of the entire universe. Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Dharma are meant for persons who are completely free of envy, Parama Nirmat Saranam. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays in this word, Kala Prasidatam. May all the envious persons be pacified. The material world is full of envious persons, but if one frees himself of envy, he becomes liberal in his social dealings and can think of others' welfare. Anyone who takes up Krishna consciousness and engages himself completely in the service of the Lord, cleanses his mind of all envy. Manas cha bhadram bhajatat adhoksaje. Therefore, we should pray to Lord Narsingadev to sit in our hearts. We should pray, Bahir Narsingha, Ridaye Narsingha. Let Lord Narsingadev sit in the core of my heart, killing all my bad propensities. Let my mind become clean so that I may peacefully worship the Lord and bring peace to the entire world. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given us a very fine purport in this regard. Whenever one offers a prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one always requests some benediction from Him. Even pure Nishkam devotees pray for some benediction, as instructed by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Sikshastaka, Ainandatanuja Kinkaram Patitam Mam Vishame Bhavam Buddhao Kripayatava Pada Pankaja Sthiti Dhuli Sadrishim Vichintaya. O son of Maharaj Nanda, Krishna, I am your eternal servitor. Yet somehow or other I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from the ocean of death and please place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. In another prayer, Lord Chaitanya said, Mama Janmani Janmani Shwari Bhavatad Bhakti Rahai Tukitvai. Life after life, kindly let me have unalloyed love and devotion at your Lordship's lotus feet. When Prahlad Maharaj chants Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya, he prays for a benediction from the Lord, but because he is also an exalted Vaishnava, he wants nothing for his personal sense gratification. The first desire expressed in his prayer is Swastiastu Vishvasya. Let there be good fortune throughout the entire universe. Prahlad Maharaj thus requested the Lord to be merciful to everyone, including his father, a most envious person. According to Chanakya Pandit, there are two kinds of envious living entities. One is a snake, and the other is the man like Hiranyakashipu, who is by nature envious of everyone, even of his father or son. Hiranyakashipu was envious of his little son, Prahlad, but Prahlad Maharaj asked a benediction for the benefit of his father. Hiranyakashipu was very envious of devotees, but Prahlad wished that his father and other demons like him would give up their envious nature by the grace of the Lord and stop harassing the devotees, Kala Prasidatam. The difficulty is that the Kala, envious living entity, is rarely pacified. One kind of Kala, the snake, can be pacified simply by mantras or by the action of a particular herb. Mantra Shadhi Vasha Sarpa Khalakena Nivaryate. An envious person, however, cannot be pacified by any means. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays that all envious persons may undergo a change of heart and think of the welfare of others. In the Krishna consciousness movement spread, if the Krishna consciousness movement spreads all over the world, and if by the grace of Krishna everyone accepts it, the thinking of envious people will change. Everyone will think of the welfare of others. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays, Shiva Mitho Dhiya. In material activities, everyone is envious of others. But in Krishna consciousness, no one is envious of anyone else. Everyone thinks of the welfare of others. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj prays that everyone's mind may become gentle by being fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna, Bhajatat Adhoksaje, as indicated elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayo, and as advised by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, verse 65, Manmana Bhav Mad Bhakta. One should constantly think of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Then one's mind will certainly be cleansed. Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Materialists always think of sense gratification, but Prahlad Maharaj prays that the Lord's mercy will change their minds and they will stop thinking of sense gratification. If they think of Krishna always, everything will be all right. Some people argue that if everyone thought of Krishna in that way, the whole universe would be vacated because everyone would go back home, back to Godhead. However, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that this is impossible because the living entities are innumerable. If one set of living entities is actually delivered by the Krishna consciousness movement, another set will fill the entire universe. Om Agyanatim Randasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shirindaya Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Once more the text. Swasti astu vishvasya khala prasidatam dhyayantu bhutani shivam mithodhya manascha bhadram bhajata tadhoksaje avishyatam no mati rapi ahaituki. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. So there are very nice facts, actually, here. In this purport also by Prabhupada. One is that the Vaishnava, Vanchakalpatarubhyascha, a Vaishnava can fulfill all the desires of anyone who takes shelter of his lotus feet. So, if you can do it, you are a Vaishnava. So who feels that he can fulfill all the desires of anyone just comes to you, says, I have this desire, and you can fulfill it. So we have still a long way to go, I think, at least for myself. And another thing what is mentioned here is that there are two kinds of kala, that there are two kinds of envious entities. One is the snake, and the other is a person who was envious, like Hiranyaksha. And the envious person, however, cannot be pacified by any means. So that is like tough. So if one of us is envious, it means we cannot be pacified by any means. That is how strong envy is. The snake can be pacified, but an envious person cannot be satisfied. So this is how horrible actually envy is. And we can see that if we free ourselves from envy, what will happen? We will become liberal in social dealings, and we can think of others' welfare. Would that be nice? Yes? I think so too. Because these two characteristics, they are characterizing someone who has compassion in their heart. So instead of filling our heart with compassion, we have to fill our instead of filling our heart with envy, we have to fill our heart with compassion. And taking away envy means filling our heart with compassion, because we cannot have empty spaces in our heart, because all kinds of bad things want to come in our heart. They want to pierce our heart, and they want to take seat in our heart. So let compassion come. And in that way, we can change our mind, and then we can become well-wishers of the whole universe. So Does the Krishna consciousness movement want to create compassion? Anybody knows? Yes, Mataji. Jai. Haribo. One of the four principles that we have is that we are vegetarian. And vegetarianism is not that we should become healthy. Of course, it's nice that we are healthy and, you know, that we don't get sick and so on. But because there are many kinds of vegetarians in the world, but why we are vegetarians is because we want to create or we want to reveal the hidden compassion in our heart. So, dharma has four legs. So the four legs are known, I think. Who knows, brahmacharis, the four legs of dharma. Austerity. Compassion. Truthfulness, compassion, cleanliness, and austerity. When Kali personified was abusing Dharma, the bull, there was one leg left. You know? Truthfulness. Compassion was already badly hurt. And of course, cleanliness was badly hurt. Austerity was badly hurt. And only truthfulness was left, but due to the increased quarrel and deceit attitude of ourselves, even that leg is becoming severely weakened. Huh? Quarrel and envy, quarrel and deceit are actually also the source of envy. So, of course, our four principles, our four main principles, are connected to these four legs of dharma. So, compassion is connected, vegetarianism is connected with compassion. And what are the others? Yes. Someone else? Yes. 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 And of course we have the vegetarian diet, which we combine also with the other three principles. But we combine it also, because we want to make it richer, we combine it with service to the devotees, doing japa, because not only the principles will develop compassion in our heart, but we practice the compassion with the devotees, with serving the devotees. And japa, chanting, will keep us connected with Krishna. And will keep us connected with the teachings of Lord Krishna. Of course, Hitler was also vegetarian. Ooh, he was super compassionate. What do you think? Sometimes. When he took a break and he was sleeping, he was compassionate. Well, actually, it is not like that Hitler was a vegetarian. Hitler got an advice from his doctor to maintain a vegetarian diet because he ate too much meat. Because of his health situation, he ate too much meat, actually more raw meat. He had to have a vegetarian diet for his health. And that's why it is kind of, you know, used by non-vegetarian propaganda that, well, Hitler was compassionate, Hitler was vegetarian, so, yeah, you know, vegetarianism and compassion doesn't go together. But if you understand why, because we really have to be clear, and we have to have full faith in the teachings of the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, and not be, you know, knocked out of our beliefs by these kind of popular logics. So, actually, that was the question which I had yesterday when I was preparing for this class. Like, compassion is very good. You know, of course, we should have compassion. Yeah, what about Hitler? And then I start to do this research. But actually, I was also in the understanding that, yeah, Hitler was also vegetarian, but he wasn't. Yeah, and of course, Hitler was also very envious of so many people which he, you know, of whom he took their lives. And that was all due to his pride. Pride is the root of envy. And Queen Kunti explains what leads to pride. Who knows these four elements that leads to pride? It's a very famous verse of her. Yes, please. You know the verse? Janmaishwarya Shruti Shri. So high birth. If someone has a high birth meaning, what does it mean, high birth? Aristocratic family. Or if you're born in the West and you see these so-called people in kind of poor parts of the world, you feel like, okay, I have a high birth. I feel like, you know, I'm exalted. My parents are earning more money, have a bigger house, this and that, than your parents or than you. Beauty. Beauty can lead to pride. Well, we see that all over the world. There are many, many examples of that. Knowledge. Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning in a lecture that he visited some conference and a scholar came and he gave his presentation, but he only used words which had more than 10 letters. Words more than 10 letters. That means that, you know, you have to have a good vocabulary about these kinds of words and also to be able to give a presentation about it. But the result of his presentation was that nobody understood what he was talking about. But everybody was in awe, like, wow, you know, he's so learned. But nobody knew what he was talking about. So a real learned person makes an effort to transmit knowledge. In this case, this person had a lot of pride because of his knowledge. And of course, wealth is the fourth root cause of pride. We see on a global level, the richer countries taking advantage of their stronger so-called economic position in the world, And there are so many inequalities that are resulting from that. So many abuses, so many hatred, and so many pains and miseries are in the world just because pride due to wealth and maintaining that kind of so-called strong position of wealth. One nice example is Europe. Europe has also kind of a pride because of the euro, and we see that there are sacrifices or victims of this pride. Countries, whole nations, doesn't matter if it's just a few people who kind of deserve it, it's their karma. No, it's the whole nation of Greece, Italy, Spain, and who knows which countries will follow. So there are many, many people in these countries. You cannot imagine how many people. And they suffer just due to pride of wealth. So these four elements, high birth, beauty, knowledge, and wealth, they give us an illusion that we have a right to enjoy more than others. We take that right and we keep it and we fight for it. I have the right to enjoy more because I am more learned, I am more wealthy, I am more beautiful, and I am from a higher birth. So in this way, if they see that someone else is enjoying, envy is born. And when envy is born, Prabhupada mentions here, an envious person cannot be pacified by any means. So that is the way to hell. Actually, envy is also created by the Lord. The place of envy in the universal form is in the rectum of the Lord. So that is the position of that quality, if we have that in our heart. I don't know what time it is. I wanted to, because there is a nice example in our teachings of an envious person. It's Duryodhan. Many of you know how envious he was. Actually, the cause of his envy, the result of his envy, was Mahabharata, the war. But I wanted to just read a little piece from the Mahabharata, just to give you an idea how intense his envy was, and what others did just to pacify him. And you will see, you know, how what result it gave. So this is a situation where Pandavas, they are now on the, they have taken the decision that if the last solution, if the last mediation of Krishna will not help to pacify Duryodhan, then there is battle. So Krishna arrives in Hastinapur to speak. So in the hall, the assembled Kuru elders waited with anticipation. As they heard Krishna's chariot approach, the hall buzzed. And as Krishna dismounted from his chariot, shouts of hail to Govinda and all glories to Krishna, Lord of the Yadavs, rang out. Krishna caught hold of both Vidur's and Satyaki's hand on either side of him and walked into the hall. Dhritarashtra rose, along with Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and others. Crossing the floor, Krishna greeted Dhritarashtra respectfully. The king offered him a beautiful throne encrusted with jewels. With his divine vision, Krishna saw numerous celestial rishis approaching the assembly from the sky. He said, many rishis, hoping to witness what will happen here today, have assembled. See, there is Narad Muni. Offer them suitable seats, for how can any of us sit down while they remain standing? Dhritarashtra ordered his servants to fetch golden seats. The rishis entered the hall like glowing planets descended from the heavens and accepted the seats. After they had been worshipped with all respect, Krishna accepted his own seat and was in turn worshipped by the Kurus. Vidur sat next to Krishna on a seat covered with white deerskin and decked with gems. Opposite Krishna, Duryodhan and Karna sat together on a single throne. As the monarchs took their places, Brahmins recited Vedic hymns to invoke an auspicious atmosphere. Gradually everyone fell silent and gazed at Krishna. Seated on his throne, he looked like a dark gem set in gold. There was perfect stillness in the hall as everyone waited for him to speak. Krishna looked toward Dhritarashtra and said, may there be peace between the Kurus and Pandavas, O Bharat. May no heroes be slain on either side. Only for this have I come. O King, I have nothing more to say. Hearing Krishna speak reminded the assembly of the soft thunder of autumnal rain clouds. All eyes remained fixed upon him. O King, you know as well as I do the cause for the present situation. Peace lies in your hands. You have a great responsibility. Your dynasty is famed for its virtue and nobility. The Kurus are especially known for the knowledge of scripture, good behavior, kindness, compassion, forgiveness, and truthfulness. Do not allow your fine heritage to be sullied. You are the Kurus' leader and must bear the reaction to any sinful acts they perform. A calamity now faces your race, caused by the Kurus' behavior. If you do not check it, O monarch, it will destroy the world. Krishna looked over at Duryodhan. The prince appeared distracted, looking away from Krishna and rubbing his face with a hand covered in gleaming gems. Krishna went on, O king, your sons are not considering morality or even profit. They are wicked and overcome by avarice. They are being unfair toward their own friends. I do not think peace would be so difficult to achieve. It depends upon you and me. You should give an order and your sons should follow it. The Pandavas never ignore my advice. Set your sons on the path of peace and I will do the same with the Pandavas. Consider everything carefully, O King. Even if you desire to rule this world, it is still better to establish peace with the Pandavas than to make them your enemies. At present, they see you as a worshipable elder. They will wait upon you and protect you, and even the gods will not be able to assail you. You will not find better allies than the Pandavas. With them at your side, you would lead troops headed by Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Karna, Ashwatthama, Yudhisthira, Bhim, Arjun, and so many other great heroes. Where is that fool who would fight such warriors? The blind king sat with his head bowed. Krishna's speech was as he had expected, cutting and painfully true. His throat was parched, and he called for water as Krishna continued. On the other hand, O king, what profit will there be in fighting with the Pandavas? What merit do you see in arranging for so many men to die? O best of Bharatas, just imagine what you will feel when you hear of the deaths on either side. There is no question that both parties will not survive the war. The kings you see here and the kings at Virat will slay each other mercilessly, influenced by anger. O emperor, rescue them from death. Save this world. Save this world from disaster. Let the feelings of affection you once bore for the Pandavas again flood your heart. Bring them here as your children. According to worldly virtue, such fatherless boys deserve your protection, especially in their distress. Now hear their message to you, which they asked me to repeat in the assembly. Krishna repeated what Yudhisthira had said just before Krishna departed. At your command, O king, we have spent 13 years in exile, expecting that you would keep your word. As we have carefully kept our pledge, so we ask you to keep yours. We have suffered greatly and now desire to return to our kingdom. O Bharata, you know the principles of virtue. Act toward us as a father should act towards his son. We will act as your sons. You are our worshipable elder. If you find us remiss in our duties, do not hesitate to correct us, O King. Set us on the proper course and yourself follow the excellent path of virtue. Dhritarashtra sifted uncomfortably. His guilt at having mistreated Pandu's son bothered him more than anything else. They had been brought to him as young children after their father, his brother, had died. It was true that he should treat them no differently than his own sons. This was surely his greatest sin, that he had neglected and even inflicted suffering on those deserving his protection. Tears fell from his blind eyes as Krishna continued. In an assembly where virtue is overcome by vice, it is the duty of the members of that assembly to remove it by all means. If vice is not removed, then it will kill all those who have participated in it. If vice prevails over virtue, falsehood over truth, then those who allow it will be ruined. What else could you do but return the Pandavas' kingdom? I desire both your good and what is best for the Pandavas. If my words are true, then let the Kurus confirm them and release the Kshatriya race from the shackles of death. Make the large-souled, virtuous Yudhisthira your ally. Do not destroy these kings for the sake of vice, nor morality for the sake of so-called happiness. Do not mistake good for evil and evil for good. O Lord of the earth, restrain your sons, who are too attached to avarice. Kunti's sons are ready to serve you and to fight for you. This is my advice. Choose now that course which appears best to you, O King. Everyone remained silent. Having listened carefully to Krishna, the kings were speechless. No one could argue with anything he said. Only Duryodhan found fault with him, and he looked at Krishna with a sly smile. Parsuram was among the rishis, and when Krishna finished speaking, he also addressed the assembly. All eyes rested upon him as his voice rang out around the hall. He wore a black deerskin and matted hair. His dark eyes glowed and his body shone with a mystical luminosity. He told the assembly a story about the ancient king, Dambodbhava. Anyway, sorry. He told a story about this king who was very proud, but then he challenged Nar Narayan, and Nar accepted his challenge at some point. He didn't want to, but then this king continued. And he had a lot of soldiers with him, and Nar pulled out a fistful of grass. He chanted the mantras and the grass turned into razor blades and they cut off. Well, they defeated the soldiers. So Parsuram is mentioning here that envy and pride will not lead to victory because Nar is Arjun and Narayan is with him. So that even Nar could destroy the soldiers of this king, what about Nar together with Narayan? So Nar's feat was wonderful. Narayan is capable of still greater deeds. So these two high-souled rishis are now present as Arjuna and Krishna. Do not, like the vain Dambodhava, try to face them in battle. Then there are other rishis who speak to highlight how much pain this war will inflict, how much misery there will come, how much selfishness will be served. But still, Duryodhan was not willing to give in. Duryodhan was breathing heavily, his brow contracted. He gazed at Karna and laughed aloud when Kanva stopped speaking. Slapping his thigh, he said defiantly, "I am whatever God has made me. It is He who created me, and He who decides my fate. I will do exactly as He has determined and nothing else. What use is this discussion?" So after he spoke like that, he became very angry and he left the hall. Then at some point, Krishna spoke again to Dhritarashtra and he said, and he appealed to him, and Dhritarashtra said, "O Keshava, I accept what you have said as the truth. What you have said is for our benefit and for the benefit of the world. By following your words, we can attain heaven. But I am not my own master." He understands that what Krishna is saying is for his benefit, but also he gives in to his attachments. "But I am not my own master, O best of men. Try to persuade my wicked son Duryodhan, who disregards all scriptural injunctions and never does what pleases me. He will not listen to me, and neither will he hear from Vidur, Bhishma, or any of his elders. Please instruct him yourself, O Krishna. If you can correct my son of crooked intellect and sinful heart, then you will have performed your duty as a friend." So even Vidur, even Bhishmadev, even his own father was at some point, you know, appealing to the compassion, the trace of compassion they were thinking was left in the heart of Duryodhan. But as this progresses, and even Krishna tried to do what Dhritarashtra asked him, to try to talk to Duryodhan, Krishna turns toward Duryodhan and said, "I will speak only for your good, O best of Bharata. I desire your prosperity and happiness as much as you do. What you are contemplating will make you suffer. Wise men in this world act only for virtue and profit. Thus they fulfill their desires. What you are proposing will not fulfill your desires. Your obstinacy is vicious, frightful, and destructive. It will hurt you, and there is no reason for it. Give it up. Pursue instead a course that will benefit you, your brothers, your followers, your friends. O chastiser of vows, make peace with your cousins. This will please your father and all the Kuru elders. Your father has commanded you to seek peace. A good man never neglects his father's order, nor does he ignore the advice of friends who know what is good. One who disregards the orders of seniors and the advice of well-wishers will be consumed as one who eats poisonous fruit dies. He never achieves his goals and ultimately is sink in remorse." So Krishna paused. He looked steadily at Duryodhan, who remained silent. And then the prince looked downward. He rubbed the floor with his sandaled foot, and all eyes in the hall were on him. And even at some point, Dushasan was saying to Duryodhan, accept this offer of Krishna." But then Duryodhan was furious He was thinking, why was everyone afraid of the Pandavas? You know, this is envy. Envy is creating this illusion. Why is everyone afraid of the Pandavas? Perhaps he had been unfortunate when he had encountered them in the past, but that would soon change. Now, aided by the Danavas, mystic power, and the combined might of the Kuru heroes, he was invincible. The prince looked at his father. How could the old man order him in this way? Accept Bhim's embrace? Bhim was his mortal vow. Duryodhan shuddered at the thought. And having ruled over the entire earth, how could he be expected to now offer his respects to Yudhisthira? You know? So I will just have one last part. Duryodhan looked at Krishna, who clenched his fist, Karna, who clenched his fist in support. The Kauru prince continued, "We are powerful Kshatriyas and will not bow down to any man out of fear. I do not see anyone who can face the Kuru army in battle, O Kesho. Why should I give anything to the Pandavas under threat of war? Rather, it is my duty to fight. If I lay down my body in battle, then I will achieve a glorious destination in my next life. What Kshatriya, born in a noble family, you see here the high family, high birth, would avoid battle out of fear of the enemy? No self-respecting ruler would bow to one who threatened him with harsh words. I am not afraid of the Pandavas. O Madhav, I will never give them any part of this kingdom. It now belongs to Dhritarashtra, and so it will remain. We are simply his servants. Although he once gave away that which should not have been given, we have rectified his error. When I was a child and dependent on others, the Pandavas were mistakenly given the kingdom. We will not make the same mistake again." And then he said, "As long as I rule this..." "kingdom, as long as I rule this kingdom on my father's behalf, I will not give the Pandavas even that much of land which can be pierced by the point of a needle." So this is how humongous big his envy was towards the Pandavas. Anyway, so it's a nice part in the Mahabharata, which can give the mood, because also often people say that, I heard that also from other Hindus, yes, but Krishna could have stopped the battle of Kurukshetra. So I don't accept the Bhagavad Gita, I don't accept Krishna, but Krishna really did his best. He even got insulted at some point and so on. But envy. This is what Prabhupada is mentioning. An envious person, however, cannot be pacified by any means. So this is the proof. And the only way that we can change the envy that we have in our heart is that we bring a change of mind. Because it's much nicer to have compassion in our heart than to have envy. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Yes, yes. Yes.
Only contamination, but still
Yes, but there is, well, it's good that you mentioned smoking, because I knew someone who was addicted to smoking. He wanted to become devotee, and he really wanted to stop. And he wrote for himself on the door, "I will not smoke." So his meditation was not smoke. But the last word which he remembered was, so what will he do? He will smoke. So our meditation should not be what to not do, but our meditation should be what we should do. So our meditation, in order to get rid of envy, should not be, I don't want to be envious, I want to be compassionate. So that's what I meant. Let fill your heart with compassion. It's like a cup with filthy water. You hold it under the tap with nice clean water, it will automatically go up. That's what I meant. Thank you for this opportunity. Other questions, comments, Prabhu? Yeah, what is compassion? Well, don't kill animals is again this don't smoke thing, you know. So we have to meditate on what is compassion. If someone is compassionate, what are the characteristics? How does a person who is compassionate, how does he think? How does he behave? What does he eat? What is, you know, these questions that Arjuna is having. Addressing to Krishna. In the same way, what is compassion? How does a person who is compassionate, how does he be? And we have many, many, many examples. Prahlad Maharaj, perfect example of a compassionate devotee. How does he behave in these situations, in all kinds of situations? What does he think? Why does he think so? You know? So this is how we should fill our heart with compassion. And that is the tap. This is the tap, the story of Prahlad Maharaj is a very nice tap for compassion. There are so many others in Chaitanya Lila also. I think it was Vasudeva Datta who said that. So there is also a tap. There are many, many taps, but we have to, you know, take the decision and have the will to open that tap. So this is, we have the taps. Sure, yes. Yes, true compassion is preaching, giving knowledge. Prabhu, you wanted to ask us? Read it, Prabhu. Yeah. It's not that we have to feel compassion, because compassion is already there. It's one of the characteristics of the soul. We, yeah. Yes. You only throw out the rubbish, take out the garbage. So I don't know which day is garbage day, but make it every day. So any more comments, questions? Thank you very, very much. Oh, Matiji, sorry. Charge your battery. I'm sorry, what is the question? Okay. When people say they want to charge their battery, what does it mean? And so I personally, I would say, sometimes I say that too, but that is to build on your enthusiasm. Enthusiasm means also that you find inspiration to continue with cleaning out your heart. So any activity, even if it's a good activity, if it's done with dislike, it becomes poison in your heart. So it's only enthusiasm that can help you to make of every activity, actually, of course, our devotional progress, nectar in our heart. So this is what I think I would mean with charging our battery. Building an enthusiasm and putting your you know, so-called attachment, parking it and having your moment with the deities or with the scriptures or with japa, the holy name, and trying to restore your enthusiasm. Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hari Hari, Hari Krishna.